Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. Feasting on the Sheep.
Hello. Well, I knew it was coming. In fact, I predicted it when I spoke with you more than a year ago about the Jewish extortion campaign against Switzerland. I told you that if the Jews succeeded in sucking the blood they were demanding out of the Swiss, eventually they would come for our blood too. And now they're here, demanding that Americans also pay them back for their losses during the so-called Holocaust, just the way the Germans and the Swiss and the French and the Dutch and others have been forced to pay them. I made that prediction because I know the Jews. I know that they always will be looking for more victims until they have sucked all of the blood there is to be sucked from this planet. And then they will turn on each other and begin sucking their fellow Jews' blood. They cannot help it. It is their nature to be deceivers and destroyers and bloodsuckers. And there is some justice in their coming for our blood now. I could even call it poetic justice. Because, after all, we are the ones who helped them suck the blood from others. We held their victims at gunpoint for them. We threatened their victims. It was our government which said to other countries, give these poor, innocent, deserving Jews whatever they want from you, or we will make you pay even more. That's what our government said to the Swiss a couple of years ago when the Jews were demanding Swiss blood. Worse than that, it was America which destroyed the best part of Europe at their behest a little over half a century ago, and then turned the rest of Europe over to them so that they could suck it dry. The Germans were the one people in Europe who had pulled the Jews' fangs from their necks and were booting them out of Germany. And so we destroyed Germany for them. And then we turned Poland and the Baltic countries and Hungary and Serbia and half a dozen other European countries over to communist rule for 50 years. Every one of these countries behind the Iron Curtain was saddled with a government bureaucracy swarming with Jews, and they sucked the blood of the people for half a century until there was almost no more blood left to suck, and the economies had been dried up. 10 years after the collapse of Jewish communism, every one of those countries is still dirt poor, still trying to rebuild itself. And the Jews still are sucking blood from Eastern Europe by forcing tens of thousands of young Russian and Ukrainian girls into the white slave trade, making them work as prostitutes for their Jewish slave owners. Do you remember how it was a couple of years ago when they began demanding billions of dollars from the Swiss? Swiss banks had kept the money that some Jews had squirreled away in Swiss accounts before the Second World War and then died before they could reclaim their loot, the big Jewish organizations and the Jewish media were complaining. That money should now be turned over to the Jewish organizations so that they could distribute it to Holocaust survivors. The Swiss were responding, sure, some of the dormant accounts in our banks undoubtedly belonged to Jews, but we follow the same rules for dormant Jewish accounts that we follow for dormant non-Jewish accounts. Just prove to us that you are the legitimate heir to an account holder, and we'll give you the money, which, in any case, totals no more than a few million dollars for all of our dormant Jewish accounts. So the Clinton administration began applying pressure to the Swiss, threatening to cut off trade with Switzerland and not permit Swiss banks to operate in the United States unless the Swiss coughed up all of the billions of dollars the Jews were demanding. Politicians elected by the American people were falling all over themselves to help the Jews squeeze as much blood as possible from the Swiss. Do you remember that despicable, toad-like Senator Alphonse D'Amato from New York, who was the Jews' principal Shabbos goy, their principal Gentile step-and-fetch-it in applying pressure to the Swiss? Do you remember the threats against the Swiss coming from the White House? You know, it was we who elected every one of those politicians. We who voted for Alphonse D'Amato and Bill Clinton and all the rest who were helping the Jews squeeze the Swiss. And it was the same thing when the Jews turned on Germany. The Germans already had paid the Jews more than $60 billion in blood money. But the Jews then began yammering that Jews who had been forced to work in the German defense industry during the war still were owed billions of dollars in back wages. So we helped the Jews squeeze the Germans once again. And then the Jews turned on France. The Jews wailed that when they were chased out of the part of France that was occupied by the Germans during the war, the French government had collaborated with the Germans. So now the French people owed billions of dollars to the Jews to atone for that wartime collaboration. And our government told the French that they had better pay. And then it was the Dutch. And then it was the big multinational insurance companies. I was quite certain that eventually the Jews would get around to us. And now they have, and no one should be surprised. Do you expect a vampire to give up his diet of fresh blood and begin drinking milk instead just because the only remaining source of blood happens to be his next-door neighbor? You know, some people criticize me because I am not polite enough in talking about the Jews. They believe that it is very vulgar of me to refer to the Jews as vampires or bloodsuckers or parasites. They remind me that most Jews wear nice suits and drive nice cars and live in expensive condos, so they couldn't really be as bad as I say. Many Jews are polite, well-educated people, lawyers and businessmen. And I really should just stick to the facts, they say, and not resort to name-calling. That's not polite. That's not gentlemanly. Well, listen, I just wish that some of these gentlemen who think I'm not polite enough would talk about the Jews themselves. They can be as polite as they want. They can stick to the facts and avoid name-calling. I'd love to hear them do that. There are thousands of gentlemen out there who know the facts and also have access to the media. But they're all keeping their mouths shut. They're all afraid that they may be kicked out of the country club if they say anything the Jews don't like, no matter how politely they say it. And since that leaves the burden on me, I'm obliged to try to get the message out as effectively as I can. I deliberately use colorful language. I deliberately use provocative phrases that I hope will stick in the minds of my listeners. It may be offensive to the gentlemen when I refer to Jews collectively as deceivers and destroyers and bloodsuckers, the way the great reformer Martin Luther did, for example. But I believe that the language I use is appropriate and accurate, even if it is colorful sometimes. Anyway, I'll just give you a few facts and let you decide whether or not deceiver or destroyer or bloodsucker is an accurate description of the Jews as a whole, as a race. I'll read you just a few sentences from an Associated Press story which came out a little over 2 weeks ago on August 28th. I quote, "In the coming weeks, Jewish organizations plan to push for payments from dozens of U.S. corporations that they accuse of using forced labor. It's their turn," said Steinberg. End quote. The Steinberg referred to is Elon Steinberg, executive director of the World Jewish Congress. The U.S. corporations are those which the Jews claim had some business relationship with Germany before or during the Second World War, more than half a century ago. Now the Jews are demanding that these companies give money to the Jews because the companies may have made a profit 55 or 60 years ago that came in part from Jewish labor. That's astounding, isn't it? Listen to what Gideon Taylor, the head Jew in an organization called the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany has to say about it. I quote again from the August 28th Associated Press report. We are looking at this as an issue to bring up with these companies in September, and we intend to bring it up very firmly and very decisively. The issue is really whether American companies will face up to their responsibility in a way that is moral and proper. End quote. These Jews turned communism loose on the world and destroyed 60 million of our people in Europe, not to mention the 100,000 young Americans who were killed by communists in Korea and Vietnam. They bled Eastern Europe dry. They gave gangster rap and the hip-hop culture to American kids. Every time you see a 14-year-old white kid wearing baggy shorts and a backward baseball cap, listening to a black rapper on his Walkman, and trying desperately to act black, you can thank the Jews in Hollywood. They gave us race mixing and multiculturalism and open borders. Whenever you see a white woman with a black man, remember that it was Jewish lawyers who campaigned against miscegenation laws and eventually overturned them. Whenever you see a group of swarthy Mexican mestizos lounging on a street corner, keep in mind that it was Jews who pushed for the changes in our immigration laws that opened our borders to the third world. Jews gave us the 1960s with A.D. Hoffman and Jerry Rubin and Mark Rudd and his Students for a Democratic Society. And at the deepest level, they gave us Bill Clinton, too. From Jewish Hollywood and Jewish Madison Avenue and the Jewish agitators on our university campuses in the 1960s and 1970s came the values, the attitudes, the mores that made it possible for someone like Bill Clinton to become President of the United States. And they are demanding compensation from us. Can you imagine? That's what they call chutzpah. And if any tender-hearted soul believes that it's unreasonable of me to blame all of them collectively for what their Red Brigades and their Hollywood propagandists have done to our people, just look at the other side of the coin for a moment. When the Jews sucked $60 billion in so-called reparations out of Germany, that's a collective tax on all Germans for the benefit of the Jews. When they extort money from the biggest corporations in America, all of us end up paying for it. If they suck $1 billion in blood money out of Ford or General Motors, and you can bet they'll get a lot more than that, that's just a cost of doing business. Prices go up to compensate, and we pay the Jews. $10 from every white American household. When they suck $3 billion out of our taxes to provide military and economic support for Israel, that's $30 from every white American household. So it is a collective thing. It is them against us. In fact, it is them against the world. The problem is that they understand that, but the world doesn't. Well, I promised you facts today. I'll give you the facts of a recent court case which illustrates how their system of blood-sucking operates. In Idaho, near Coeur d'Alene, there's a church. It's called Church of Jesus Christ Christian. Its minister is an 82-year-old retired aircraft engineer named Richard Butler, who came from California to Idaho in 1973, bought 20 acres of rural land, and built a church on it. He's held Sunday services there for the past 27 years. Better known than the church itself is its outreach program, Butler's Call to the Nation, which is also known by the name Aryan Nations and has members in many places outside of Idaho. Butler preaches a brand of Christianity generally known as Christian identity. It's a brand that is at odds with most of the mainstream brands. In fact, it preaches that Jesus wasn't a Jew, and that today's Europeans are related to the Israelites of the Old Testament. It preaches also that today's Jews are interlopers who have no claim on either the Old Testament or the New Testament. Needless to say, this doctrine is not looked on with favor by either the Jews or those Christians who believe that the Jews are God's chosen people. To counter Butler's preaching, the Jews have used their media to demonize Christian identity and its adherents, portraying them as violent and dangerous haters. Now, I don't want to argue religion today. I believe in neither Christian identity nor any of the mainstream brands. I don't really know Reverend Butler, although I did meet him once 14 or 15 years ago. I have met enough Christian identity believers over the years, however, to know that most of them are not violent and dangerous. They're a bit more tightly focused on their religion than most mainstream Christians are, but other than that, they're a pretty normal bunch of people. The Jews' use of their media to create a climate of hate against people like Richard Butler, however, has led to some violence. People incited by this Jewish hatred have made problems for Butler and his church. 2 years ago, someone tried to burn his church down. Someone shot and then disemboweled his pet German shepherd. People have tried to disrupt his church services. Sometimes hostile crowds incited by Jews with megaphones have gathered outside the gate to the church property. And sometimes Butler's church members have overreacted to this hostility and done foolish things. On the night of July 1st, 1998, a car drove past Butler's church, and two security guards heard what they thought was a shot fired from the car at the church. They hopped in their own car and gave chase, firing several shots from a rifle into the back of the other car in a Wild West scenario and eventually forcing the other car to stop. The man and woman in the car claimed that what the guards thought was a shot was just their car backfiring. After some discussion, the guards let the man and woman go, and the latter promptly went to the police and filed assault charges against the guards. The guards were arrested, tried, and convicted. And if Reverend Butler had been a mainstream Christian preacher, or almost anything but a Christian identity preacher, that would have been the end of it. But a badly misnamed organization supported by Jews and leftists, the Southern Poverty Law Center, heard about the case and saw it as a way to silence Butler's preaching and make a lot of money for themselves at the same time. On behalf of the man and woman whose car had been chased, the Southern Poverty Law Center filed a civil suit against Butler and his church, claiming that the pair had been so frightened by the chase that they were suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, a fancy name for what used to be called shell shock, and that since the security guards had been acting to protect the church, Butler and the church were responsible for the shell shock. The two principal actors in the Southern Poverty Law Center are Morris Deese and Richard Cohen. They make their living by filing ruinous lawsuits against organizations and individuals their Jewish supporters hate, and then collecting donations from those supporters. I ought to know. 5 years ago, they sued me, and although they won only an $85,000 judgment for their purported client, they raised for themselves nearly $10 million in donations from their supporters by sending out fund appeals while they were suing me. This sort of behavior is called barratry by the legal profession, and it used to be illegal. Today, barratry is winked at by our corrupt and politicized courts if it is for a politically correct cause. 9 days ago, a jury in Coeur d'Alene decided that Butler and his church must pay more than $5 million to the man and woman who were frightened by the security guards. The value of Butler's church and his other property is estimated at $200,000. After the verdict, Morris Deese crowed to the media, and I quote, "We intend to take every single asset of Aryan Nations now and forever. We even intend to take the name of Aryan Nations and close that sad chapter in the history of Idaho." End of quote. Really, there was never any pretense during the trial that it was a claim for damages. Everyone understood that the aim was to bankrupt Butler and his church, stop Butler's preaching, and intimidate other Christian identity churches. All of the statements of the politicians and the media people and spokesmen for various human relations councils and other leftist organizations, both during and after the trial, also expressed the same view. "It is good that Butler has been silenced," they all said. "He is a hater," according to Morris Deese and the Jewish media. "His religion is not politically correct, so let's shut him up." That's what the trial was about. So, how did this happen in America, where we're supposed to be free to express our opinions and to preach any religion we want, whether everyone likes it or not? I'll tell you how. First, it wasn't just Morris Deese and Richard Cohen. They're a couple of bottom-feeding shysters, a couple of barrators always on the prowl for opportunities to enrich themselves. But they couldn't do any damage in a healthy society. This happened because a corrupt judge in a totally corrupt court system and a totally brainwashed and feminized jury, a nearly all-white, though mostly female jury, were eager to prove their political correctness. They all were eager to show their agreement with the lynch mob rather than risk having the lynch mob turn on them. And the lynch mob, the people who decide what is politically correct and what is not, and then using their finely honed psychological skills, persuade the TV-bred lemmings that all of their peers already are on the bandwagon and will think ill of them if they don't climb on too. You know who those people are. I'll just hit the key elements here once more. First, we have a population of lemmings, unable to think for themselves, who always follow the crowd. There's not much we can do about that. Human populations everywhere consist mostly of lemmings. That's the way Mother Nature designed things. Second, the strong individuals among our people who should be shepherding the lemmings in healthy directions and setting the moral tone for all of us have themselves gone astray. They have become soft and self-indulgent. They have forgotten their responsibility to provide leadership. We need to awaken them and remind them of their duty. And third, seeing that the shepherds had left their posts or fallen asleep, the vampires moved in to feast on blood. The Jews took over Hollywood, over Madison Avenue, over television, over our popular music industry, over our principal newspapers and magazines. And using this media weapon to control the lemmings and corrupt our government, our courts, and our other institutions, they began feasting. We need to begin shooting vampires. But we haven't yet done what we need to do. That's why the lemmings think that it's just fine that the Jews were able to silence Richard Butler and take his church away from him. That's why the Jews certainly will succeed in bleeding Ford and General Motors and dozens of other American companies of billions of dollars in reparations for the Second World War, while the lemmings look on approvingly. So let's get started on what we need to do. Thanks for being with me again today.